This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My mother died from a drug overdose, and I never met my father. Eventually, I was put into foster care, and at that time, I was 10 years old.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
I wasn't exactly a little kid, nor a teenager. I was extremely awkward, and being a girl child with no guardian to look after had perks of its own. The state put me into a foster home located on the outskirts of the city. The house belonged to a woman named Mona, who was in her late 40s. She ran the foster home with 5 kids, including me. Her boyfriend often came to visit her. I never quite liked the guy. He had a very rough face. There was a huge scar on his cheek, which signified he must have been in a horrible fight, because that was nothing but a knife scar. Anyways, Mona seemed fond of that guy. Whenever he came, she used to dress and make up a lot. They used to go out and return late at night. By the time they came back, we were all asleep. Among those kids, my only friend was my roommate Maria. Her mother left her on the road and she was put into foster care by an NGO. Every child who lived in that house had a tragic past to deal with. Mona was not a very affectionate person, but she never ill-treated any of us. She celebrated all of our birthdays on a particular day. This was probably her way of cutting the costs as much as possible. Our rooms were upstairs. Mona's bedroom was the biggest room in the house. She slept downstairs. I was playing with Maria in the backyard one day. She accidentally fell from the swing and hurt her leg. I went to call Mona and knocked on her bedroom door. As she opened the I noticed multicolored wallpaper stuck on the walls of her entire room. There were flowers and butterflies printed on them. I stood in awe seeing the grandeur of the room. Her room seemed like a different world altogether because of those vibrant wallpapers. She went to get Maria, but I stood there and kept looking around. Mona got busy with Maria in the living room. I was taking a close look at the wallpaper when suddenly a woman whispered in my ear, "Help me." I jumped back immediately out of shock. I looked around, but I was the only one standing in that room at the moment. I didn't understand. Was it all my imagination, or did I really hear a woman's voice? "Hello? Is there anybody here?" I said nervously. No reply came back, but I started to hear a whispering sound. I concentrated on the sound and figured out it was coming from the bedroom wall right in front of me. I got closer and placed my ear on the wall. "What are you doing?" I turned around and saw Mona standing there and looking at me with a surprised face.
Nothing. I was just watching the wallpaper. You have a beautiful room, Mona," I said.
"Well, thank you, sweetheart. Come on, let's go. It's time for lunch," she replied. Without wasting a single second more, I left the room with a very awkward face. I knew she saw me leaning on the wall and listening, like a crazy person. A few months passed. 2 kids got adopted, and it was only the 3 of us left in that house. Maria, a boy named Tony, and myself. Tony was younger than us. Hence, he always listened to us. One day, Mona was working in the kitchen, when suddenly, a leak took place under the kitchen sink. She called Marco for help. Marco came and started to check out the leak on the pipeline. I was sitting at the kitchen table and watching him work.
I think there's a screw that needs to be tightened. Shoot, I don't have a wrench,
Marco said.
I think there's one in the basement,
Mona replied. None of the kids liked to go to the basement, as it was dark and dingy. But Mona was busy and Marco was working as well, so I volunteered. I switched on the basement light and slowly went down the stairs. The basement had a funky smell, probably because it had no window or vent as such to let the air flow. On the right corner stood a wooden shelf. I saw the wrench sitting on the shelf. I walked to pick it up just when I noticed a big trunk in the left corner. I thought that there might be toys or something exciting in there, but as I got closer to the trunk, I noticed it was sealed with a metal lock.
There's nothing but junk in it.
My eyes followed the voice, and I saw Marco coming down the stairs of the basement.
Then why is it locked?
I asked curiously. Marco watched me for a moment, and then walked to the shelf and picked up the wrench.
Come on, let's go. We got what we were looking for, he said.
I came out of the basement and he locked the door behind me. I'm not sure, but since that day, I started to realize that there was something wrong with this place. At night, I could hear voices running through the halls, but the more I tried to listen, the more they faded away. One night, I got up from my bed hearing a quarrel downstairs. I tiptoed from my room and peeked from upstairs. I saw Mona and Marco were having a serious argument, but they were speaking in a rough, low voice.
What are you saying? Are you out of your mind?
Look, I'm telling you, this kid will get us in trouble.
Don't talk like an idiot. She's just a dumb kid. She'll never be able to guess the truth.
She asked me what was in the trunk today. We have to get rid of it.
Oh, come on. Did you chicken out because of a kid? Don't you remember how fooled the cops in California were? Listen, darling, there's nothing to worry about, okay? Just relax. I will keep the basement locked at all times from now on. Happy?
Yeah, that'll be better. I'll look for a place to get rid of the trunk soon.
They went to their bedroom and I returned to my bed. What could be inside of that trunk? I kept thinking. From that day, Mona always kept the basement door locked, but they couldn't keep the mystery hidden for long. It was a Saturday night. Mona and Marco were out. Tony, Maria, and I were watching TV in the living room.
Hey, let's play hide and seek,
Maria suddenly said. Tony and I agreed, and we started the game. After a few turns of play, it was my turn to find everyone.
Ready or not, here I come.
I rushed upstairs and started to look for Maria. I easily managed to find Tony as he hid under the bed, but Maria was nowhere to be found. I realized that she might have hidden downstairs. I rushed downstairs, and after checking the entire living room, the only place left to hide was Mona's bedroom, because the basement was already locked. I pushed the door of Mona's room and said, "I know you're hiding in here somewhere, Maria." I smelled a strong chemical in Mona's room. The odor was coming from the walls. She sprayed something on the wallpaper, which made her room smell like hospital cabins. I walked close to the right wall and checked the vibrant wallpaper pasted on it. As I touched the wallpaper, it felt wet to me, and I became sure that there was a weird liquid applied all over. Suddenly, Maria came out of Mona's cupboard and tried to play a scary prank on me. As she went to grab my neck from behind, I turned around and skillfully dodged her, which resulted in her stumbling upon the wall. As soon as she fell onto the soggy wallpaper, she accidentally tore it, creating a hole. Hundreds of ants and spiders started to crawl out from that hole. It was clear that these insects lived underneath the wallpaper. We were absolutely terrified and came out of the house crying in fear. Our next door neighbor, Mr. Stewart, came rushing to our house. He got inside Mona's room, and don't know why he immediately called the cops. Within 15 to 20 minutes, the cop cars came, and we saw Mr. Stewart telling them something with a fearful face. The cops broke into the basement, and a horrible truth moved us all. Mona and Marco were none other than convicted murderers who robbed and killed people in California. They murdered around 6 to 7 people and magically found a way to hide the corpses. They escaped from California and came here to live in disguise. But the cops found out that the bones of those victims were kept in that trunk. They would never have been able to discover what happened to the victim's whole body if not for the day that Maria scratched those wallpapers accidentally. Yes, Mona and Marco skinned their victims and turned their skin into house wallpaper. But they were no professionals, hence they couldn't preserve the skin properly, which attracted insects. They were trying to drive the insects away by using chemicals, but they couldn't hide their grotesque crime. When the cops handcuffed Marco and Mona, I was standing at the house porch with Mariah and Tony. While walking towards the cop car, Marco looked at me and then to Mona.
I told you that that kid would get us in trouble. I should have choked that bitch right in her sleep that day.
I still can't forget his blood-red eyes when he said how much he wanted to kill me that night. Now it all makes sense to me that woman's voice from the wall, those whispers running around the house. But I can't tell these to anyone. I know that no one will believe me. I'm just lucky that I didn't end up in their trunk, or as wallpaper on their wall. Before starting the story, I would suggest you guys to go subscribe to the channel. It turns out that most of you guys who watch me aren't actually subscribed. So, if you like the content and want to support the channel, go ahead and subscribe and hit the bell. It's free, and you can always change your mind later. I am a foster mom. I've been running this small foster home for 6 years now. I grew up as an orphan. Hence, I feel bad for every kid who is left to live without parental care. A friend of mine runs an NGO that helps these foster kids to get adopted to a loving, caring family at times. My name is Michelle, and this is a story of a new kid whom I just took under foster care. It was a Tuesday morning. I was making breakfast for my other kid, a 9-year-old girl who was also under my shelter. I was busy making pancakes when Jenny said from the other room,
"Mommy, your phone is ringing. Someone's calling you."
I realized I left my mobile in a hurry in the bedroom, so I ran to get it. I was late, hence the call got disconnected before I could pick up. When I returned, I saw Jenny was all dressed to leave for school and waiting for breakfast. I quickly served her the pancake.
"Here you go, Jenny. I made your favorite."
She smiled and started to eat them. 10 minutes later, her school bus arrived. I walked her to the bus and she waved me goodbye. I was about to enter when my phone rang again. This time, I rushed to pick it up. It was my friend Kate, who runs the NGO.
"Hey, Kate, sorry I couldn't take your call earlier. Jenny just left for school."
"No problem. Listen, there's a boy about to arrive in our NGO. He's 7 years old and unfortunately recently lost his parents in a plane crash. The boy has an uncle working overseas, so there's a chance he might go up for adoption. But until that happens, I want you to take care of him. I'll come by with the lawyer and other legal papers tomorrow, and also drop off the kid to your house. Is that okay?"
"Oh, sure. Tomorrow evening I'm free."
"Tomorrow evening it is then. See you."
After the phone call, I went to buy some groceries for tomorrow's dinner. I felt emotional thinking about this poor little child who just lost his parents. I wanted to give him a warm welcome, so I decided to cook something nice. I bought some good quality meat, some fresh veggies, sweets, and chocolate. When Jenny came back from school, I sat her down and said,
"Jenny, tomorrow we are going to have another member in this house. A little boy will come and live with us."
Jenny got so excited and said,
"Wow, I can have a little brother now."
I smiled and hugged her for being such a sweet girl. The next day, Jenny and I decorated the entire house with balloons and colorful paper chains. At around 7 p.m., the doorbell rang. Jenny rushed towards the door and opened it with a big smile. Kate was standing there with a small, blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy, and beside them stood a man in his late 50s. I guessed him to be the lawyer of the boy.
"Please, come on in,"
I said with joy. They all came and sat down in the living room. Kate looked at Jenny and said,
"You're becoming such a pretty girl."
Jenny blushed in happiness. She then looked at the little boy and said,
"You're my little brother, right?"
We all laughed hearing her adorable words, except the little boy. He sat down like a robot, didn't talk, didn't smile, even for once. Kate said,
Luke, say hi to your sister. This is going to be your home now. You'll be very happy here.
Luke looked at me and said in a lifeless voice,
Who is she?
Oh, that's Michelle. She's going to be your best friend from now on,
Kate replied. I smiled at him, but he kept staring at me lifelessly. His face was so blank that after some time, a stare started to make me feel weird. We all discussed the legal terms and condition and the details of this procedure. It was good to know that Luke's parents have left him enough money to have a sustainable life ahead. He can go to college and avail all the opportunities without any disturbance. When Kate was leaving, she bid Luke goodbye. Luke didn't go to hug her once. He stood there some time while Kate got into the car and then went back to the couch in the living room. I slowly went and sat beside him.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
I knew how much trauma this kid had gone through, so I said in a soft voice,
Luke, do you want to get some ice cream?
He kept his head down and didn't answer. Jenny said,
Maybe he's tired, Mommy.
I smiled and said,
I guess you're right. You keep watching, Luke. I'll go make your bed.
I heard Luke asking her,
Is she your real mom?
Jenny smiled and said,
No, but I like calling her my mommy. She's nice. She's gonna take good care of us.
I prepared their beds. I arranged a bunk bed for both of them. Jenny slept on the upper bunk, and I tucked in Luke in the lower bunk. I kissed them goodnight, and Luke turned to the other side of the wall. I went to my room and lied down in the bed. I don't remember the exact time, but I woke up with a strange feeling. With my sleepy eyes, I saw Luke standing right in front of me and breathing heavily. The entire room was in complete darkness. I thought he might be feeling sick, so I turned on the bedside lamp and almost screamed in fear. Luke was standing there, looking at me, except his eyeballs were pale white. I don't know how, but his eyes were turned upside down, revealing the pale white part. I spoke in a fumbled voice.
Luke? What happened to you?
He blinked once.
My mom is calling me. She's waiting for me in that blue house. My mom. She keeps calling for me.
I picked him up from the ground, shouting, Jenny! Jenny! Jenny came running.
What happened, Mommy?
Call Aunt Kate right now! Please, just call her!
Jenny called Kate, but she didn't answer the call. I put Luke on the bed. I got so scared that I couldn't sleep the entire night. Jenny also remained awake with me the whole time. The next morning, when Luke woke up, I asked him,
Do you remember what happened last night?
Luke stared at me, not saying a word. Kate came to see him within some hours after receiving my message. She sat him down and said,
Luke, sweetie, you have to understand that your mom and dad are in heaven now. They're watching you from there. Unfortunately, they can't come here.
She wasn't my real mom.
We were all shocked to hear this little boy say such a weird thing. Kate and I exchanged a surprised look.
Sweetie, what are you saying? She was your mom. She loved you.
My mom is in that blue house. She's waiting for me there. Can you please take me there?
None of us was getting what was going on with this child. Out of curiosity, I asked,
Do you know where this blue house is?
Luke replied,
Yeah, I can take you there.
What happened next was beyond our expectation. Kate and I thought the best way to help this child would be to do what he says. He probably wants us to go outside. Children can do weird things for weird reasons sometimes. So, we all hopped into my car and I started the engine. Luke sat right beside me and said,
Take the first left.
Trust me, guys, he gave me directions like an adult for at least half an hour. And beyond our imagination, after taking the last right turn, we came near a huge lake. On the side of that lake stood a small wooden blue house. We got out of the car and walked towards the main door. Kate knocked on the door twice. We heard slow footsteps inside the house. Within a few seconds, an old woman opened the door. She looked quite like my granny. With surprised eyes, she noticed all of us and said,
"Who are you all?
Did you make my favorite bread pudding, Mama?" The old woman immediately looked at him and started to sob terribly. She hugged him to her chest and kept crying for hours. We came to know that later, the woman had a son who was in the army. The son often came during holidays to visit her. One morning, she got the news from the army general that her son died like a hero in the war 2 days earlier. His name was Sam. Sam died on the 21st of December, on the same day Luke was born. It might seem like a weird coincidence, but every time Sam came to visit his mom, the first thing he would say was, "Did you make my favorite bread pudding, Mama?" and hug the poor old woman. Luke roamed around the house, telling us very unnatural details which only a member of that house could know. And the even more terrifying thing is that the old woman showed us her son's childhood picture. It was none other than Luke. When I was younger, I wanted kids more than anything else in the world. But when I discovered I would never be able to carry children of my own, I decided to be a foster parent. My husband was happy to do this with me, since alternative methods of having our own children were well out of our affordable range. We fostered children for years, and though every child has had their own issues and challenges, I've loved them all. There was one child we took in that was different, though. The last child we ever provided a temporary home for. Simon wasn't immediately different than the other children we had cared for, but there was always something off-putting about him. He was quiet, withdrawn almost. It wasn't uncommon for children who came from less fortunate situations, but I didn't have any solid information about his past. For some reason unknown to me, the organization wouldn't tell me anything about him other than his age and his name. I'm usually always given at least a minimal briefing on the child's past. I have to know what could trigger them. There are always topics to avoid, and different ways to be sensitive to different situations. With Simon, we had to go in blind. I was left to draw my own conclusions as to what horrors he might have seen. He didn't appear to have any visible scars, and when I tried to hug him, he didn't flinch. A good sign. Children of abuse typically flinch whenever there are arms raised. I had no interest in pressing him for where he came from. I figured as he got comfortable, he would open up to me. So I began the all-star treatment that I'd had success with in the past. We let him choose a color to paint his room and did it all together. I should have taken note of the color he jumped to right away, but I just wanted to make him happy. Giving him the power to make choices was one of the first steps to him feeling safe. And so we painted his room an obnoxious blood red. When I asked Simon what else he might like to decorate his room with, he thought on it for a long moment. I expected him to blurt out fire trucks or superheroes, but I had been wrong.
Maybe some skulls, or fire, or how about both?
This was the first excited thing I heard come out of his mouth, and truthfully, I was a bit disturbed. I laughed it off in the moment, thinking he had just been acting out, just one of the many red flags that I would ignore during his stay. This was the point I decided to try to ask Simon about his past. I figured I might try asking if he had been to certain places as a way to ease into asking where he had lived before. But before I could get much out, he seemed to sense my unease.
"Are you scared of me, Mommy? All of my mommies are scared of me."
He smirked.
"All of your mommies? Of course not, sweetheart. Why would you say that?"
I tried to keep a smooth expression, despite my concern at his statement.
"Don't worry, Mommy. You'll be scared soon."
He stared at me blankly for a long moment, and then started laughing hysterically. After that comment, Simon refused to say anything else on the topic. I asked him why his mommies were scared of him, and he was silent. As you could probably guess, I was confused and slightly worried by this, but the organization hadn't given me anyone to contact. I'd only seen his social worker when he arrived, but they hadn't given me her contact number, and I'd never met her before that day. One day, I was working in the garden. Simon was running around.
"Simon, slow down,"
I said in a loud voice. He looked at me and started to run towards me, making a very weird face. I just stood there and watched him coming towards me. I was feeling uncomfortable, but I didn't move, thinking that he was just trying to play with me. He came very close to me and gestured his hands in a stabbing motion. I said,
"What are you trying to do?"
He smirked and replied,
"I was checking to see if you were afraid of dying or not. Simon, you can't say things like that, you know?" "I have done way more than I spoke."
And he walked towards the house. I don't know how long I stood there, stunned with fear. I decided to follow up on his whereabouts. I went to that organization the next day. As I inquired about him to the manager of the organization, I saw his face turning pale. He said,
"Why? Did he try to hurt anyone?"
I was utterly shocked to hear such a statement, because why would someone say something about a little child for no reason? I looked at the man with a very angry face and almost screamed, saying,
"Will anyone tell me what the hell is wrong with this child?"
The man then said Simon was adopted by two other families, and each family suffered mysterious accidents resulting to the death of child, and don't know why those parents claim Simon was involved in those accidents some way. The general manager looked at me and said,
"Ma'am, we're trying to contact his real parents. You will be the first to be informed once we've dug out any single information on him. Till then, watch him and be careful."
His last words, "be careful," ran a shiver down my spine. I got into the car and drove home. The moment I stepped inside the house, I received the shock of my life. Simon was sitting on the floor, holding my other foster child, Carrie, by her neck. He placed a sharp knife on her neck and stared at me with hatred and disgust.
"Simon, what are you doing? This is dangerous. Let her go."
Carrie kept sobbing out of fear. I walked closer to him, just when,
"Don't try and come closer, or I'll cut her open."
Words like that coming from a child is definitely not something one is used to hearing. I realized that the only way to stop him from doing something crazy is to calm him down with my words.
"Baby, let her go. Mommy is here to take care of you. You don't want to do this, Simon." "Really? If you wanted to take care of me, then why did you go back to the organization? Carrie told me you went there to find my real parents. I don't want my real parents. I don't have any real parents. They are all dead."
My body was numb in fear.
"What are you saying, Simon? What happened to your parents?" "I burned the house down while they slept. I still recall their screams and cherish those memories."
Suddenly, my eyes went to the glass window, and I saw my husband standing there and gesturing me to keep calm. I realized that he probably had called the cops by now. All we had to do was save Carrie from Simon. That way, he couldn't hurt him. I started to sob.
"Simon, baby, please let her go. We can all be a family. I love you. Daddy loves you. Why are you doing this? Daddy doesn't love me, but I thought you really did. But you broke my trust, and now here's your punishment for that."
He lifted the knife, aiming at Carrie's throat. I jumped.
"No!"
I ended up guarding Carrie with my hand, but before I could pull her out from Simon's grasp, he slashed my arm. My husband bolted inside and unarmed Simon immediately. Simon was screaming like a hungry wolf, and his eyes were burning like hellfire. My husband held him tightly so that he couldn't do anything or hurt anyone. The cops finally came and took Simon to a correctional facility. This experience is why Simon was the last foster child we ever raised. I couldn't face the thought of caring for another murderous child. He has no recollection of the darkness he held. He still loves his home with us. The last time I went to visit him at the correctional home, he looked at me with the same lifeless stare and said,
"You were the first mommy who wasn't scared of me, and you'll be my last mommy too."